From spooky legends past, down through generations, to haunted locations that hold a ghostly past. Come one, come all, come finders and seekers, hear the creepy side of Nepa.
Hello, I am Dan Kozlowski.
And I'm Nora Herchick.
Nora, I can't believe it's already halfway through the month of October. Seems like it just started, doesn't it?
I know. It's hard to believe. I mean, Halloween's right around the corner, and we have some pretty exciting things coming up for our Halloween episode, too. So I'm really excited for this one. I'm really excited for the Halloween episode. It's all going to be great.
And we had some great episodes already in the month of October. We had Pottsville. We had Lock Haven. And then the last episode was pretty interesting with Jeff Frazier.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, we've been kind of covering a lot of ground this month. I'm really excited.
Yeah, I think the show has been doing great. We're getting a great response from our listeners. If you're new to the show, I just ask that you follow The Creepy Side of Nepa on whichever podcast platform that you listen to us on.
And make sure that you like and follow our Facebook page, which is WNEP's The Creepy Side of Nepa. That's where we post all of our episodes, so you won't miss an episode. And we also post some pictures and elements that we've spoken about in some of our episodes, as well as we've been posting some video vaults from WNEP news stories that we covered that kind of dove into the creepy side a little bit.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting looking back at the past stories that WNEP has been doing throughout the years of sort of diving into the creepy side and the paranormal side of the area.
Yeah, it's definitely been an interesting ride.
Speaking of interesting, we have an interesting show planned for this evening. Joining us on today's episode is Dorothy Dietrich and Dick Brooks, directors of the Houdini Museum located in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the creepy side of Nepa.
Hi, thanks for having us.
No problem. I know Houdini died on Halloween. Like, what are some, I know Houdini had some ties into the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area. What are some stories leading back to him?
Well, there's several things. It's an interesting story. First of all, Houdini, you never stop learning about Houdini's history. And I will tell you that as a historian, we get all crazy excited whenever we discover something that has never been uncovered before. And so, yeah, we have a few things that are very cool over the years that we've turned up. Houdini performed in Scranton in like the 1915 period. And he did several challenges in Northeast PA that he hadn't done anywhere. There was one that he did in Scranton for the Standard Brewery folks. They challenged him to go into a barrel of True Age Beer, which was the was a beer company in Scranton. And he had stopped. He had done the beer challenge before, but he had stopped doing it as of 1912 because of how deadly it is. Apparently, when you submerge yourself into a vat of beer, you're drinking all the alcohol from that beer through your pores. So you can imagine how toxic it is.
Yeah, that's something I wouldn't really think about.
Yeah, and plus you're sealed inside of the barrel, so all of that carbon dioxide that's leaking out, you know, all the gas that's leaking is going into your system. It's impossible to breathe. So he had been sick for days after he had done that challenge and decided, I've proven that I can do it. I don't want to take this one anymore. Well, the Standard Brewery folks had heard about this challenge that he's not doing anymore, and they thought, you know, being real clever, when he gets to town, he's probably not going to do it, and we'll get the $1,000 prize that he's offering to anyone to stump him at a challenge, because if he refuses to do it, that's a failure. So they were hoping for the money, actually, and he tried to talk them out of it, and of course, they wouldn't be swayed, so he did it one more time in 1915, and he also, there was a home furnishing company called the J.B. Woolsey Corporation, and they built furniture, and they built a packing crate on stage the time of the performance, made out of 2-inch wood, nailed him in with 7 pounds of nails, and he got out in 6 minutes, which was less time than it took them to build it and put him in there.
And usually they would build it ahead of time and display it in the theater. But in Scranton, they said, no, if we display it in the theater, you can maybe make some changes. So they insisted that they build it right at that moment on stage. So it was a very special challenge.
You can imagine the drama in the room that this, there it is. It's being built right in front of you. And the tension from Houdini, because he doesn't know what these guys have planned.
Sure, and there's no time to look at it beforehand.
Yeah, you can imagine. He had to be pretty, pretty intense.
Was that the first time that they had built something like that on stage and then he had to perform? Or had that happened at any time before that?
I'm not sure. I've never found any evidence of ever having it done on stage like that. Generally speaking, like Dick said, they usually would have to present the challenge in and display it at the theater. So, you know, like weeks before, you would have these advanced ticket sales because people would want to come and see that particular challenge. The cool thing about Houdini, though, is if he was performing in Scranton for a week, there would be enough promotion and publicity ahead of time. Well, that did all kinds of great things. Number one, the challenge allowed him to have free publicity, because now what challenge do you think he's going to accept in town? The one that has the quirkiest, the hardest? What do you think he might take? Well, actually, he took the one that had the most employees from the company. So those people would not only
come to see the show.
They not only would build the challenge and present it, but they also would buy tickets for the show. And back in those days, they didn't have the kind of media that we have today. They would hand out flyers that all over town. And, you know, if they had 150 employees, that was a lot more likely you're going to get more flyers out than if you've got 20 employees.
Sure, so it was a way of free publicity for his shows.
Constant. It was awesome. It was incredible. He was such an incredible public relations person. He had that totally figured out.
He seems like he was ahead of his time back then.
Way ahead. And to this day, it's amazing how if he were alive today and know about Twitter and all this other stuff, holy cow, man. There'd be nothing stopping him.
Absolutely not. If he could do that much with just, you know, flyers and everything,
yeah,
the things he could do now would just be incredible.
Yeah, and of course people loved it. Everybody that came to the show, of course they wanted to see their challenge performed, but they didn't really want to see him fail.
Yeah, of course. It's kind of better when you see him succeed. It just adds to everything, like all the mystery behind everything. You know, you're trying to figure out how did he do that.
Yeah. But they sure wanted to be there in case he failed.
Yeah, that's the thing about Houdini. Everybody wanted to be there the day that he didn't succeed, because they could tell their kids and their grandkids, holy cow, I was there, I saw it.
Yeah, that one time that his trick didn't go right, they wanted to be there for sure.
Yeah, so it was always a sellout. He and Will Rogers were the only two performers that were able to sustain an entire week of shows, ticket sales in Scranton. Typically, the acts that came through would be a three-day tour, and they'd do Scranton for 3 days and then do 3 days in Wilkes-Barre.
Now, I did hear many stories of Houdini trying to explain spiritualist at the time. People were trying to con people out of money. And wasn't there a story of something with Houdini contacting a spiritualist in Wilkes-Barre area?
Yeah.
Yes, that's George Valentine. And this is something that Houdini was passionate about. Now, he did not say, it's important to know that Houdini wasn't just a goofball that was trying to get publicity with this. He really wanted to eliminate the people who were conning folks. There were mediums that were claiming that they could communicate with spirits, and they would get grieving wives or grieving family members to give them plenty of money so that they could hold a seance for communication. And when Houdini found out that these people were illegitimate, that they were using magic technology and methods to give the illusion that they were being communicating with media, with spirits, Houdini was furious, because there's two things. Number one, if you're putting on a show, you should say you're putting on a show and say it's not real. Because if you buy a ticket to a magic show, you expect to be fooled. However, if you are paying money to speak to your loved one who'd passed away, you expect to be talking to the real deal and not being tricked and being conned into thinking.
He called them dishonest deceivers. He was an honest deceiver. He told you he was tricking you, but they didn't let you know that.
Right. Houdini seemed to be upfront, letting people know they're for entertainment values.
Exactly.
But he had an agreement with at least 15 of his friends, both before and after, that whoever died first, they would try to contact the others. And some of them died ahead of time, and some of them died after. And no one ever made contact, both before or after, including his wife.
Oh, wow. So his wife did the seances for the, she agreed to do it for 10 years. And she did that for 10 years. And that was very heartbreaking for her because in her heart, really, she wanted it to be real. She wanted to be able to.
I think she thought it might have been possible.
You know, she thought if he could do all that he did in his life, why couldn't he be able to do that?
She was from a very religious Catholic upbringing. So I think she hoped that maybe it could happen.
Now, she wanted it to continue. She realized how important it was each year to tell the story about the code and about the seance and why to do it. Because everybody thinks that Houdini thought for sure he would be able to come back. But honestly, he would have loved to come back. But the main thing is he wanted to prove to the world that if the great Houdini does not return, then it's not possible. But that's not to think that Houdini didn't believe that spirits exist. His wife, Beth, decided that the seances should get continued after those 10 years that she did them. And a dear friend of hers was Walter B. Gibson, of the both of them. And Walter was actually a ghostwriter for Houdini. Houdini wrote several books, and Walter was the one that made them happen because he was a very prolific writer. He was also the author of the Shadow series. You know, they ended up making a radio show out of it. If you remember, who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men.
I do remember seeing a couple of clips of that in the past.
Yeah, the shadow knows.
Well, he was the one that devised that.
Yeah, a genius of a writer. He was really brilliant. And so he was personal friends with Houdini and Bess, and he had participated in many of the seances with her, and she asked him to please continue the seances, which he did in New York for many years. And in the 70s,
did him with us at the Magic Townhouse for a lot of years.
How many years have you guys been holding the Houdini seance?
Since the 70s.
Okay.
Yeah, since the 70s, a long time ago.
And do it like once a year, or do you guys do them a couple of times?
Yeah. No, on his death, he died at 1:26 in the afternoon on a Halloween, October 31st. And the funny thing about that is, even in death, he knew when to die because you're not going to get the press to show up in the middle of the night. Or, you know, at 6 in the morning, you're gonna get them to show up at right in the middle of the day.
How do you get to die on Halloween? And it's an actual fact. You can look it up. That's actually when he died. It's amazing.
Yeah, that is bizarre.
So now on the...
So he asked Dorothy to continue.
He was getting older and said, you know what, I feel that I need to turn this over to someone that I trust and that will carry on the whole concept with the meaning that Houdini wanted it to be put forward with. And so he asked me to swear that I would continue it with the same historical importance that Houdini had meant it to have.
And no kind of trickery or anything like that.
So the idea is that if he does come back, it's the real thing. That's not somebody pulling strings or, you know, things happening because of magical effects. And so, yeah, we've been doing it for many, many years. And on the 50th anniversary, we were at the Magic Townhouse in New York City. Now, for some reason, that particular date, it was everybody wanted to be there, all the media, and everybody wanted to be there. So we said, oh, boy, we've got to make this spectacular. Now, we had most of the Houdini collection on the top floor of the townhouse. We had three floors.
Mm-hmm.
And so we brought all the stuff down and displayed it on all of the walls in the main area where we were having the seance. And one of the walls was a brick wall. And so we would put nails in the cracks between the bricks, you know, and hang the pictures there. So there we are. We had a reception area where people would come in and they'd have food and drinks. And then once it was time for the seance, we had everyone move over to the other end of the room, which was where the seance table was. So I start the introduction and I'm explaining about the seance and the history of it. And if you came to see if you came to see a magic show, that's not what's going to happen. And so there I am. I ask everyone to join hands and have a moment of silence. And oh, by the way, Milburn Christopher was there, and he would come to a lot of our seances. But he was a very—I don't know if you know who Milburn was. He was an author and a magician, and very, very, very respectable. And very serious person. He's the kind of person, when he enters the room, everybody straightens their posture. That kind of guy.
Probably gets quiet in there also.
Yeah, it gets quiet. They go, oh, Milburn's here. Better behave, you know. And so he said to us very firmly, if there's any kind of trickery going on for this, I cannot be a part of this. And I said, no, we're carrying it on the way Houdini wanted it. Of course there won't be. So he was sitting right next to me at the seance table, and I asked for a moment of silence. And at the other end of the room, you hear key rash, boom, and a picture fell from the wall and smashed on the floor. And Milburn looked at me like with this glare, like, how dare you, you know? And I said, I didn't do anything. you go look at it. I'll stay here. You go look. I didn't do anything. And I'm like, okay, was that Houdini? I don't know. But it happened. And the picture, it was a poster of Houdini's water torture cell, which has a lot of intrigue because a lot of people thought Houdini died doing the water torture cell. So that's kind of a cute little link, too, because if Houdini appeared, what would he want to do? Well, he threw the water torture cell on the floor.
Proving that's not how he died.
That's not how he died. So is that true? I don't know what happened, but that happened. So anyway, there's so many stories like that. And then on the 75th anniversary of Houdini's death, we were at the Houdini Museum here in Scranton. And Dead Famous was a show from England that was traveling around the world doing shows about famous people who had died. And so
there's clips of that show on the YouTube.
So that day, there were two of the performers from that show that came, and they brought their whole film crew and everything. And we have in the seance several things that have been used for every seance since the beginning of time. And one is a chandelier, it's like a candelabra, rather, that sits on the table and with five candles on it. And we always light the candles at the beginning of it and blow them out at the end.
Spirit trumpet, handcuffs, stuff like that.
And tambourine. And then a lot of Houdini family pictures and things that Houdini...
Autographed pictures of him.
Things that would intrigue Houdini to come back, you know.
Yeah, stuff that once belonged to him.
Yeah, personal stuff. And so there we are. We're having the seance. And I said to Houdini, give us a sign. Blow out the candles or make something move, speak through the spirit horn, make the handcuffs open. And all of a sudden the candles started flickering like crazy. There was no windows open. There was no air conditioning. The candles were flickering like madly, weird. And we thought, you know, well, it could be some kind of a quirky thing. And we didn't really pay much attention to it. So then I'm talking about Houdini's picture with Houdini and his wife, Beatrice, and how many times she tried to communicate with him. And so then I said, well, give us a sign, Houdini. Let us know that you're here. And the candle, a big hunk of the wax from the candle dropped on the table. And it went kaboom on the table. Everybody at the table jumped.
It was on a tray.
It was on a silver tray. Mm-hmm. So when the candle hit the tray, it was boom. And everybody was like, whoa. Was that Houdini? I don't know. It sure was a big hunk of wax.
It definitely was something you guys weren't expecting, that's for sure.
We weren't expecting it.
There was another time we did a seance in Manhattan, and there's all chandeliers all around the room, and only the chandelier over the table started to sway back and forth. It was really weird.
Yeah, that sounds very bizarre, especially right directly above where you guys were doing the seance.
Yeah, that was at the Sojourn restaurant in Manhattan where we did it several times. And all there's like six of them or whatever in the room, and they're all completely still. But the one over the table where we're doing the seance, it was swaying back and forth. It was very eerie.
Now, that place was where Houdini first lived as a child. It was at that time, and Houdini's day, it was a boarding house. And the room that we did the seance in is now a restaurant, but it was the community room for the complex, for the building. And so that's very likely where Houdini would practice his magic in that room. And so it was really charming. We did it there several years. And the one year we were doing the seance, and I asked for any kind of a sign, and I heard a crash. And it sounded like glass breaking. And I thought, well, that's just people in the kitchen, because it was a restaurant. And I thought maybe something happened in the kitchen. I didn't even think anything of it. I didn't even ask, you know.
Yeah, they could have dropped a dish, a coffee mug, something like that.
And it turns out it was a planter that was on top of the counter right in the seance room. That was the guy that was, he was one of the waiters. He said, oh, yeah, I was standing back there, and I just saw it slowly move to the edge of the counter, and it just went right off the edge. He said, I was surprised you didn't make a comment about that. I said, why didn't you say something?
He didn't say anything pretty much till everybody left.
They were all gone, and then he said, yeah, that was so weird how that thing slid up. I said, what thing? He said, you're over here, and he went and picked it up. And I said, wow, why didn't you say anything?
So do you guys think that, you know, these are more just coincidences that happened, or do you think that this is Houdini reaching out?
I can't even say, because, you know, we are asking them to show up. 2 years ago, we were doing it at the Sojourn restaurant, and this little fly, as I'm explaining all of the artifacts on the table, this little fly comes and lands on my arm, which is very odd. Flies don't usually land on you. They land on your food if you're eating. And so it landed, and it was not leaving. I, you know, like wiggled my arm, like get lost. And finally it got off of my arm, but then landed on Houdini's handcuffs that were on the table. And it stayed there for a huge, long time. It was like 10 minutes this fly sat there. And I said, so is that you, Houdini? Did you come back as a fly? It's like, it was very odd. And so then someone at the seance that time explained to me that that could be something, because there's a thing called
transmutation of the soul,
that in some faiths they believe that a person can come back as another being.
And which reminds me, one time at the gravesite, remember that when we were doing the run through?
We had planned to, my whole life I was very upset that when you go to visit Houdini's gravesite in New York City, his bust was not there. It was broken in years back. And I would always ask the elders, why don't we take up a collection and replace it? And they'd always say, nah, it's just throwing away good money. They're just going to break it again. Nah, forget about it.
Right. You know, it seems like something that should be replaced.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's how I felt. And that's how people feel now that we did it. By 2010, I said to Dick, you know what? If we, like you and me, don't do it, nobody's going to do it, and it will never get replaced. It'll absolutely never get replaced. So we went to several trips to New York City to hang out at the gravesite, and we were there with Steve Santini one day. He had called us. He's an escape artist from Canada who had a show called Deals from the Dark Side. And he was traveling the world discussing different things that are on the dark side.
Now, this is also on YouTube. If you look up Steve Santini, Deals from the Dark Side, Houdini, you can actually see what she's about to tell you.
Okay.
So Yeah, so he was thrilled. He was like, wow, I can't believe the timing is so good. And so there we were doing a run-through so that he could get his film. It wasn't the actual placing of the bust because that was going to happen later. We had to actually drill holes in the granite at the gravesite in order to facilitate getting that bust installed.
And we didn't have it ready yet at that time either.
When Steve Santini is there with us, we start the filming, and we bring the bust up to the monument, and everybody is in awe of how wonderful it looks. And all of a sudden, off to the side, there's this beautiful red-tailed hawk that shows up and lands on top of one of the tall monuments behind Houdini's gravesite. And okay, that's weird to have a bird of prey show up that close to humans. But it sat there for a long time.
That's very bizarre.
It is bizarre. And now the one gentleman that was with us from Canada was a native. And he said,
Native Indian.
And he said, this is a sign. This is definitely a sign. And I said, is that you, Houdini? I hope you approve what we're doing. And, you know, and then the red-tailed hawk flew off of that monument and went further down and landed on top of a short monument exactly right next to Houdini's gravesite and sat there for another 10 minutes.
And in Houdini's last show, guess what he had?
He had a red-tailed hawk in his last performance.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
So is that Houdini? I don't know.
And you can actually see the hawk.
It's on YouTube.
Steve Santini, Deals from the Dark Side, Houdini. You can actually see the hawk. It's amazing.
And so, yeah, when you watch it, you won't even believe it. It's like, we were in awe. Like, how is that possible? I was talking to Steve about a week ago, and he reminded me of that hawk. And I said, yeah, it gives me the chills just thinking about it. It's like, wow.
Yeah, it definitely seems like you guys had your fair share of coincidences, if they're not something more. You guys have anything weird that happened to you at the Houdini Museum in Scranton?
We have a lot of stories that happened at the Houdini Museum. The building is over 100 years old. Now, this is strange. The one time we had a paranormal investigator come in, and he was walking around the museum looking where would be a good place to set up the equipment and everything. And I said, well, we get the most activity in the theater. So I would suggest that would be a good place to start, and we can move from there. And so we set up the equipment, and he had a pendulum and a flashlight. So he sat on the steps that lead up to the stage, and he's talking and he's saying, give us a sign. We're hoping to get any kind of a sign. Make the pendulum move. Make something happen. And the pendulum is moving. It's like moving. What the heck? It's moving. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe he's a showman. Maybe he's moving it, you know? So I'm not buying it.
Right.
But he's doing this again. And then he says, well, this is all well and good, but yeah, can you make something like real happen? And behind him, there's these heavy metal chairs, these folding chairs. And the chairs went, bubba, bubba, bubba. like you could, like it was really intense. And he jumped off the steps. And he's like, holy, and you know what? And so now, he's not sure if he wants to continue. And the other people are like, that's what we came for. That's what we came for. What are you talking about? And
then yeah.
All of this happens in the dark, right? I said, why don't we try something in the light? Put the lights on and see if we can get motion and movement. And he says, I don't know. We should. And then he said, I got to stop and think. I don't know. And so that was the most intense thing that happened.
We even had people once run out.
Right? We had, one guy said he saw a full body apparition in the other room. They had set up three cameras, one in each room. There are three rooms at the museum. One is the history room, the prop room, and the theater. And the one in the prop room, that's where all the Houdini stuff is. All of Houdini's personal artifacts are. And so if you're going to get any kind of, Houdini communication, that would be where it would be, unless you move some of those artifacts into another room. And so I told him that you should at least have a camera in that room and have that focused somewhere. So now the camera guy is setting everything up, and we turn out the lights, and he's trying to do a run through and see if he's got everything good. And he comes running with, now this is a big guy. He comes running into the theater. He goes, I had he couldn't even talk. I had a full body apparition. I gotta go. I'm not staying here. I gotta go. And I'm like, holy cow, why would he go? He got what he was looking for. It's like he just couldn't do it. I guess he didn't think it would happen, and he didn't know what he would do if it did happen.
Actually, more than once we've had people run out the building. That is true.
So, now,
other than the Houdini artifacts you guys have in there, is there any history behind the building?
Yeah, the building's over 100 years old, so it's got a lot of history. There was a guy who was at one point, it was a bar, and it was the Palace Saloon, and he was the bartender at the Palace, and he was kind of a cratty guy, and so he was always there, right there where we had the stage set up, right behind the bar. And he actually had a massive heart attack right in that spot where we have the bar place, the stage place now. And so we do get a lot of hot spots. People get a lot of orbs, a lot of, you know, when you take photographs throughout the museum, you get orbs, you get all kinds of weird things. There is a spot in the theater behind, it's kind of like halfway through the audience seating. If at night you're real quiet, you can kind of hear what sounds like conversations in the room. And they're not talking to us, the living world. They're talking to each other with no regard for this modern life. It's like they are in their own world back there.
So maybe it's something from when it used to be a bar. Maybe they're having a bar conversation.
Yeah.
Out of all the creepy things that happened to you guys over the years, doing the Houdini Museum and also the seances over the years and stuff, what is one of your favorite stories, the creepy story that happened to you guys, something that really stuck in your mind after doing these seances for so many years and also the museum?
I was doing a tour in the daytime, and I was in the prop room, Houdini's prop room, and I'm talking about the different artifacts and the beer challenge and so there I am on one end of the room with the crowd, and on the other end of the room, there's this big, it's like 14 inches tall. It's a large ceramic rabbit that sat on top of the shelf that is just about head height, just above head height. And that has been sitting there for years. And it was a ceramic rabbit. He was kind of like with his hands out. He was sitting on his back hind legs with his hands up. And it looked as though he was pointing to something. So I had it focused on one of the posters. So it was kind of cute, you know, and I thought that's a nice little magical effect. So there I am talking, and all of a sudden, this rabbit comes flying across the room and smashed on the other side of the smashed on the floor. And this guy in the audience says, "Wow, how'd you do that?" And trust me, I didn't do that. I love that rabbit. I would not smash the rabbit just for your entertainment.
So there was no reason for that rabbit to fall.
No, it was a solid shelf. And it had on that shelf, you know how the black lights are that are the tube ones, like the fluorescent ones? There was one of those on that shelf in front of it. So it had to jump up over that to get off of that shelf. So it came up over there and across.
It seems like you guys have had a lot of run-ins, sort of, you know, whether it is the paranormal world or not, or if it's just, you know, some sort of weird coincidence. Yeah. Do you guys ever find yourselves getting, like, scared at all? Or...
Well, I'll tell you what. Yeah, there was several things that happened in that building. The one time I came in, and the men's room has a sink that is the old-fashioned sink that's attached to the wall. It's just the ceramic bowl that's attached to the wall. And it was on the floor, and the pipes didn't break. It just bent Like, oh, wow. First of all, it was on off of the wall and laying on the floor.
Upside down.
Upside down. And I thought, holy cow, what the heck? How could that even happen?
Yeah, that takes a lot of force.
So I didn't even want to talk. I didn't want to touch it. I called the plumber. And he came over and he said, hey, wow, how'd you do that? I said, okay, we didn't do it. It's, we came in and it's like that. He said, all right, let me get the water shut off. So he went downstairs, got all the water shut off. And he said, that's creepy, man. How in the world? I don't know how you did that. And he was sure that all those plumbing fixtures, the metal should have snapped and leaked at least and had water all over the place. And then another time I came in and there was no water in the building. So I thought, oh, okay, Dort, you didn't pay the water bill. So I called the water company and said, I have to pay the bill because we have no water. I guess it got shut off somehow. So she said, all right, give me the address. And she looked it up. She says, no, you're paid up. You're fine. And I said, okay, why don't we have water, do you think? She said, well, go out to the street and see if there's any water running down the street because it could be a water main break. So I went out and I said, okay, any other ideas? She said, nope, you got to call a plumber. So we call the plumber. He comes in. Now, the stage is built up over where the trap door is that goes to the basement. So we have the trap door on top of the trap door to get into the basement. So it's a big rigmarole, and there's a big heavy prop on top of the trap door that is part of our backstage presentation. And there's a lot of, you got to, first of all, know where that trap door is. And you've got to move all that stuff off of it before you can get down there. So a normal human wouldn't even know how to do it. So the plumber comes in and he goes downstairs. He says, well, you guys shut the main water off. We said, no, we didn't. Why would we do that? And why would we call you and tell you that the water's not working if we just turned it off? That doesn't make sense. Because it's like, you know, it's like a $150 bill just to have them show up.
Yeah, you wouldn't call them for no reason.
No, it's like, no, that's silly. Okay, think about it. That's silly. I mean, that's not what happened. He said, well, I can't explain it. It was actually shut off. But stuff like that happens all the time. Oh, one time we came in and in the magic store, there was a chaos. All of the books were just tossed. It was like somebody like flipped them all off the shelf. There was books and props all over the floor. And we thought for sure we got robbed. So we quick ran to the back door to see if that's in place, you know. And no, there was nothing out of place. The doors were all locked, and it was just a manifestation that happened inside the building. Now, that only happened that one time in that drastic a way. But one time we were doing the presentation that we put on called Haunted Mysteries of the Beyond, which is a full evening where we stir up the spirits and do all kinds of experiments with mind reading and mental telepathy, clairvoyance, telekinesis, psychometry, ending with a seance in the dark. Well, we do the whole beginning two-thirds of the performance and then have a break with snacks, pizza and refreshments, and then go on with the seance as the ending of the evening. Well, during the break one time, several of us were standing talking and having munching on some snacks, and this woman was with her back to the magic store, and there was a prop, a magic prop, that literally flew from the shelf by itself up over, whacked her on the back of the head. It was like, she went, what the heck? And she turned around and I said, nope. And like everybody there, like six people that were standing in the conversation, they all saw it happen. And they said, what the, what was that? I said, I don't know. You paid to see an event. There you go. You got your money's worth. You know, we didn't even do the seance and bam, there you go. You're welcome. What it was, I don't know. I cannot explain that. It was actually just weird.
But it sounds like you're kind of okay with these weird experiences. You're not necessarily scared of them. You more so welcome them.
So far, it's just been malicious behavior, but nothing demonic, you know?
Just something that causes a little chaos every once in a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Keeps you on your toes.
Like a bratty brat.
Like a prank of some kind.
Yeah, stop it. You know, cut it out. It sounds like sometimes there are the conversations, and some people think that it could be, well, first of all, it could be people that lived there, because it was a building for a very long time, you know, over 100 years. So it could be anything. Could be people that are at the bar talking. Could be miners, because Scranton was a big mining town. That, you know, after a day's work, go to the bar.
Yeah, definitely.
And then some, I don't know what part of the room, but sometimes women feel somebody stroking their
hair. Oh, yeah. The women do feel somebody touching their hair. And a lot of times in the dark, they feel somebody touching their ankles.
And it's always in the same room?
Yeah, in the theater. But we only do the seance, you know, the haunted, the theatrical seance in the theater room. So, yeah, that's always there. And now paranormal people have told us that that is probably a child, you know, that's just kind of crawling around playing on the floor. So that could be a spirit of a child.
And yeah, that would make sense that it's low, they're touching their ankles.
Yeah. So there's also, yeah, the touching the hair. We get a lot of that, a lot of that. And I tell women, you know, that's okay. They've never hurt anybody. We've never had anything bad happen. Just feel, you know, feel like you're special.
And there's nobody near them.
There's nobody near them. Everybody is, you know, in their seats holding hands. And we're in the front tied to two chairs. We have the audience tie us to the chairs so we can't move. And and it happens in total darkness, the seance. So it's very cool. And then there is a, sometimes, not every time, but sometimes we hear from the ceiling.
And when they feel the hair touching, that's in the full light. That's not in the dark. That's in the full light.
Yeah, that happens in the dark and in the light. There is in that room as well, upstairs, it sounds like tap, 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 like a rhythmic tapping. And some people think it sounds like somebody's bouncing a ball, but I said, you know what? It's hard to get that good a rhythm going unless you're really good at, you know, bouncing a ball. But it sounds to me like it might be a rocking chair, you know, rocking. But I don't know. And then one time, only once, we were in the middle of the seance, the theatrical one at night, and in the dark, and from the front door, like from the set, was like the ceiling above the theater, from the front of the building all the way to the back, there was this rumble, like it sounded like, you know, those old wooden dressers with the wheels. It sounded like that, like somebody was, you know, moving this thing across the room, and it was bum 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 bum, and it went all the way back.
To me, it sounded like a bowling ball.
But it was really like very strange. Definitely interesting. And the thing is, with stuff happening like that, people that have never been there before, they don't realize exactly how important those kinds of things are, because they think maybe, you know, being a magic place, we're making it up.
Sure. Well, it definitely seems like you guys had your fair share of coincidences, weird things happening, the creepy things, if you would say, over the years. If anyone was interested in coming to the Magic Museum, how would they get in contact with you? What's the best place they could find some information out?
Well, if you look at Houdini.org online, you will find everything that we do and all of our schedules and, you know, the timing and our phone number. But basically, call us anytime, and we'd be happy to explain what our schedules are. During the COVID, we are kind of just taking it easy. We're taking a break from everything until everyone can safely come in and out without any fear of safety. So that we're on hold right now. But we're hoping that, you know, beginning of the year, next year, we'll get cranked up again and everything will be back to normal. But always do call first for reservations, especially if you're coming from a distance. Because even when we are open, we do sell out a lot on weekends.
I'd like to thank you guys for joining us on the show this evening. You definitely had some interesting stories.
Great.
Well, you know what? We love being a part of it. And there's much more to tell about Houdini. Stay tuned to Houdini.org. We'll let you know what's going on.
Lisa, thank you again for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Have a good evening.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on The Creepy Side of NEPA. Before we leave, we just have a few things we would like to remind you of. First is The Creepy Side of NEPA Halloween Quiz. You could find it online at wnep.com/contest. The Creepy Side of NEPA Halloween Quiz consists of questions relating to The Creepy Side of NEPA and also Halloween. It's a perfect way to test your knowledge on The Creepy Side of NEPA and win some great prizes along the way.
And don't forget about the Creepy Side of NEPA map, where you can go to find all of the locations that we have spoken about on the podcast. So you can see them on a map. And if you guys want to plan your own little Creepy Side of NEPA tour to go on, obviously be socially distant. You can just go onto the WNEP website and find the Creepy Side map, and it's all there for you.
And one more thing, if anyone out there has any ideas for another upcoming episode or have a creepy story you would like to share, reach out to us. Our email address is ghost@wnep.com, or you could always reach out to us using our WNEP Creepy Side of NEPA Facebook page.
Yep, we're always looking for new stories. Nothing's too creepy for us.
Thank you for joining us. Enjoy the Creepy Side of NEPA.
This has been the Creepy Side of NEPA. If you have a spooky story that took place in northeastern or central Pennsylvania, send it to ghost@wnep.com for your chance to share it on an upcoming episode. We're dying to hear from you.